Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. It's Farmer Friday. We'd love to hear from you all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. A couple of things just before we get going here in the show today. First of all, we do have an AgPhD Collegiate Agronomy Workshop that we are hosting next week in Watertown, South Dakota. We'll be giving away a few college scholarships at that event as well. Love to have you join us there. Even if you aren't a college student, I don't care what age you are or whether you're in college or not, doesn't make any difference. We do cover a lot of great agronomic information, talking about drainage, soil fertility, weed, insect, and disease control, and even a little bit on talking to non-farmers. Next thing is, I had sent something out to a bunch of agronomists I do training with, and or at least I was putting things together, I should say, today for some of these agronomists. And one of the things that I got thinking about is just, what's the job of an agronomist? And what's the job, for that matter, of a farmer? And so a lot of times as we go through our working days as farmers, let's just talk about as farmers right now, we're worried about a lot of things, right? We're worried about the weather. We're worried about if we're getting our crop in, what the price is going to be, all these things. And we're just thinking about, hey, I got to get this task done, this task done, this task done. But I don't think very often we step back and we think, why are we doing this in the first place? Besides the money, obviously, why are we doing it in the first place? Well, what we're trying to do is provide more and better food for our growing world. And when you stop and think about the noble purpose of what we're actually trying to accomplish, hopefully that changes the perspective just a little bit. Because let's face it, I mean, there are a lot of things that you could do in life. There are a lot of jobs out there that, quite frankly, don't help people. But what we do every day as farmers, and for that matter as agronomists, what we do every day is we help people. And we can do some great things for the world if we just do a good job with what we're trying to get accomplished out there, which again is raising more food and better food for our growing world. So that's what we are here to help you with at Ag PhD. We're happy to take any of your questions and talk about anything that's happening in your farm and help you toward this end goal. So, you know, very often we do talk about yield here. I mean, you hear us talk yield every day. What can increase yield? What won't increase yield? But also it's the nutrition of things. So when we talk about weed, insect, and disease control, when we talk about fertility, we talk about drainage. Yep, part of it's yield, and obviously yield's what pays the bills. But I want you to just kind of think about all the times over the last year that you've heard about grain quality, whether we're talking test weight, protein, just overall nutrition that's in that grain. Let's take this a step further. If you feed some of your grain to your livestock, if your livestock has any issue, it's lacking in anything, any one nutrient, then chances are your crop was lacking in that too. So just think about that a little bit, that, hey, what we're trying to do out there is such a great thing for the world. And it's not just yield. We got to continue trying to get better quality as well. And usually the better quality thing turns out to be more yield along the way too. Why do you think we talk about micronutrients here? Why do you think we talk about drainage? I mean, these things should make you money and should hopefully give you better quality of that grain as well.
All right, Brian, do you want to dive in and start taking some of these questions?
Sure.
All right, let's hit the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
Got one from Dan in Minnesota, and he said, I heard you guys yesterday talking about calcium and magnesium and how balancing them should be a top priority to help natural drainage and soil health. Can you please explain? I'm struggling with both of those things and wondering if this may be part of my answer.
Okay, what I often say when we talk about drainage is, look, your goal ultimately is to raise more yield, right? So you need a healthier plant to do that, which usually means you need a healthier soil. So what does healthy soil even mean? Well, there's one thing that I can promise you, if you don't have, you won't have a healthy soil, and that is air in the soil. You have to have air because a lot of the microbes, the beneficial things, and there are trillions of them, even probably in a handful of soil, okay? So there are all these beneficial things in the soil. Many of them are aerobic. And what that means is they need air. If they don't have air, they die. And pretty soon your soil isn't as healthy, which means your crop isn't as healthy, which means you don't have the yield, you don't have the money, and pretty soon you're out of farming. So we've got to figure out a way to make that soil healthier. And yes, we do talk about drain tile to keep the water table down. That's it. It's not to get rid of all the water. It's not to have the thing run every time it rains. It's only when the water table rises above the level of the tile line. But in addition to that, we do talk about calcium and magnesium. And here's the reason why. Calcium is a much bigger molecule than magnesium. So my example I always give is I say, all right, just pretend you were in a great big room with like a 30-foot ceiling or something, all right? You're sitting there in that room, and then you fill that room floor to ceiling with basketballs. Are you still going to be able to breathe? You bet you will. There's air that's going to get through in between those basketballs. Think about that in soil. We would call that pore space in the soil. Okay, now let's say you get rid of all the basketballs. You're still sitting in this room, 30-foot ceiling, and now you fill the room, floor to ceiling, with sand. Now are you able to breathe? Nope, you're dead. And the reason why is there just simply is not enough pore space. And it's that same kind of contrast in terms of particle size. Think about a basketball and a grain of sand, okay? It's that much difference. And, you know, I don't know what the exact number is, but all I can tell you is calcium is a much bigger molecule. If we've got a bunch of calcium there, you will have more pore space in your soil. If you have more magnesium there instead of the calcium, you will have a lot less pore space. You will have more drainage issues. You will not get as much air going down into the soil. So eventually, you're not going to have as healthy a soil because you just simply don't have as much air getting as deep in the ground as when you've got a bunch of calcium out there. So that's the main thing and the reason why we want lots of calcium in soils. Well, stay tuned. It's Farmer Friday.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. Let's head down to Missouri first to start off this segment of the show. We've got Brooks with us. Brooks, how's it going?
Not too bad. I can't complain. How about you?
Well, you know what? We had an above normal temperature average through the month of January, so that's not bad when you're in the north. How about down your way? You guys looking forward to a good spring?
Yes, you know, and like you, I feel like we've been above average temperature, so you can't complain about that. But yeah, we're looking forward to some spring work. We're trying to get some P and K on, and at least the markets would cooperate, and we'd haul some corn, but we haven't seemed to have done much of that yet.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just talking to one of our guys that does a lot of the trucking. He's like, all right, when are you going to sell some more corn? And I said, you tell me when the market comes around, and that's exactly when I want to do it. But the P&K market, not so bad. What are you getting out there right now? Are you putting out potash and MAP or DAP?
Yes, potash and MAP. I'm actually spreading it as we speak. And I don't remember exactly what it's going for today. I heard, and I promptly forgot. So, but yeah, we're putting it on hot and heavy as fast as we can get it on the ground.
Are you broadcasting it, or how do you guys do it on your farm? And then do you do a straight rate across the field, or do you do some variable rate too?
We actually do some variable rate. We just started that 2 or 3 years ago, actually.
Awesome.
And we broadcast it. So yeah, we're trying it out, and we've been happy with the results so far. I couldn't give you an exact figure on how much it has made us or saved us, but we enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't know if we've necessarily used less fertilizer, but I always feel like we're putting it in a better spot where it's going to gain us some more money. So even if our fertilizer budget's the same, I'm pretty comfortable that we're bringing our yields up with the variable rate. That's been a fun thing here. My other question with that, though, is if you're putting it on top of the ground, how are you working it in? What do you guys do between now and planting?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. We let it soak in with the rain, and that's all we do. We're completely no-till, and so we just, I think what happens is it's not this year that we see the benefits. It's the following year, 2 years from now.
Sure.
And so this year we'll use 2 years ago's fertilizer.
Yep. I know a lot of the guys that are doing lime on no-till are saying the same thing, that, you know, it's going to come active a little slower than it would if we were doing the tillage, but hey, we get all the benefits of no-till working for us too.
Sure.
Okay, so as you're doing that and you're putting this out, do you do something with the planter too for fertility, or is this your main method for P&K for the season?
This is our only method of P&K application. Like you know, we do some anhydrous, but whenever I plant, it's just simply I put seed in the ground. So there's no fertilizer application at that time.
Yep, and I'm not sure if I've asked you about this, but how did the anhydrous go this fall? Was it a smooth fall for you, or did you have some challenges with weather too?
You know, I was pretty lucky. Little brother, he peeled off whenever we were still combining and ran a lot of the anhydrous, and so I was pretty lucky. I didn't have to get in on much of that, but the 200 acres I ran seemed to run pretty smooth. You know, there's always grim ones you have to work out of anything whenever it's sat all year, and darned if, you know, there was no grim ones in my rig, and so I had to hook it up and had to start running immediately instead of working for 2 days figuring it out. So it worked out pretty well.
Awesome. Well, hey, good luck to you, Brooks. Really appreciate a chance to chat with you, and hopefully everything goes smooth getting that P&K out there.
You bet. Thank you. It's good talking to you.
You bet. Let's head down to Nebraska. We got Chad with us right now. Chad, how's it going for you?
I'm pretty good, you guys.
Not too bad. You just heard Brooks in Missouri putting on P&K today. I don't know if anybody in Nebraska is getting that done just yet, but it's coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think there might be a few rigs trying to go in the area where the snow's melted off in some fields.
There you go. You know, we got just a little skiff of snow again last night, so that, and it's still a little ways off where I'm at in South Dakota, but I don't know. Whenever I start hearing about those things, it really gets me that much more itching to go planting in the spring. Brian was talking about how many weeks away it is on our farm. When do you guys start planting? If, let's just say, the weather was great between now and spring, what would your ideal date be?
Like 2012, when we had that really warm spring leading into that drought, I think we were putting corn in around the 10th, 11th of April. But typically the last couple of years, you're more like that 25th.
Yeah, that's probably fair for us as well. We'd love to be down at that April 10th. We're already covered by crop insurance at that point, and We just haven't had those conditions. Last year we got in right at the tail end of April, and I guess at that point we're just not willing to push it too far and mud stuff in, so to speak. We'd kind of just prefer to wait. How about on the soybean side? Do you push those guys early? Because I think, what's your crop insurance date on soybeans? Is it around the 25th?
Correct. Yeah, the soybeans, with the treatment and stuff, you know, guys been going a little bit earlier, but I think you still got to try to watch it, watch your soils, and I'd rather go a couple days later and plant in more ideal if you can get it than using the calendar as a gauge.
Yeah, I know it's a good thing to keep us real, that when we get those 80-degree days and it's the 10th of April and we have some, you know, wacky weather for a couple of days for us, it's all right. Hey, it is only the 10th of April. We got to hold our horses here a little bit. How about on the fertility side? Now, for you, you said there are a few rigs running your area. Are you guys broadcasting fertilizer, or how do you do it?
There's quite a bit of just generalized soil sampling, good sampling, zone sampling, and then guys apply accordingly. I mean, right where we're at, it's mostly irrigated. So, you know, we don't have to worry about nutrients getting tied up too bad from lack of rain and things like that, because guys will just fire up the pumps and
sure,
apply 70, 80, 100s, you know, if we don't get the rain to come through. But then, you know, like back to the planting dates, the other thing is, you know, if you get corn in too early and if it struggles and burns up energy, you try to come up and you get an irregular stand, that really deems irrigated yields where the populations are pushed. So guys have been finding out that getting a perfect stand maybe May 8th on irrigated ground is out yielding that April 25th stuff that laid there for 30 days, you know?
Yeah, you definitely have a pretty good tool in the tool belt there with the irrigation. I talk to guys all the time. They talk about, well, I can get my herbicide activated with that. I can get a much more even stand because I know everything's going to get a drink of water on the same day and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's a neat thing. We don't have any irrigation on our farm, so we're just hoping the good Lord blesses us with rain at the right times. So this year, Chad, going into it, we hear a lot of guys talking about more acres of corn. Are you staying with your normal rotation? Are you guys pushing it a little bit with some more corn?
We just stick with our normal stuff. We do quite a bit of corn on corn, and then we rotate some soybeans and seed corn back and forth. So just the seed corn needs to be on rotated ground for purity reasons. So we don't really ever change it on our farm, but
sure,
you know, some of the bigger guys probably are taking a look at economics in that matter.
Yeah, you know, you talk about the seed corn acres. What are you hearing, I guess, from the companies you work with? Are they putting in more acres of seed corn production in 2020, or is it going to be a year they back off a little bit?
I think certain varieties they need to restock, because last year you had a lot of trading around going on with that prevent plant situation and shortening of hybrids. I think the inventory is probably all switched around in different maturity zones. Inventories probably really went way up and other maturity zones went way down as that swap was happening. So I'm not really involved on that side of it. We're just in the growing and production side. So I'm not 100% on how that's all going to play out, but that's just what I've been hearing.
No, I've been hearing the same things. Yeah, it really kind of threw the industry for a loop when all of the early day stuff moved south and guys were planting some hybrids and maturities that they wouldn't normally consider. But yeah, it comes back to growers like yourself restocking the inventory. I know I was speaking with a seed corn company actually just today about this, and they said, wow, we got a lot riding on this 2020 production. We need a great crop out there to make sure we got plenty to sell for the next year. Hey, Chad, thank you. Really appreciate having you on the show today. Good luck heading into this spring.
Yep, no problem. Thanks, guys.
Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bill. any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or Water Hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like Water Hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
We started utilizing the Dual React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, three no-excuse modes of action, zero modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show. We'd love to hear from you today. Hear what's going on in your farm. Are you planning for the 2020 crop season right now? Are you actually out in the field doing some work or in the shop? Our phone lines are open again at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head up to Manitoba. We got Wes with us right now. Wes, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what are things looking like up in Manitoba right now, heading into the spring of 2020?
Well, right here in southern Manitoba, we've got snow cover over everything, but not very much. So we had a very wet fall, as a lot of places did. And so the fact that there's not too much snow is a good thing for us.
Sure. Do you have a lot of frost in the ground? Did the snow cover come early enough to keep the ground halfway warm, or did the frost get deep?
Yeah, the frost is quite deep. We had the early snowstorm the second week of October. We ended up with about 25 inches of snow. It was just quite ridiculous. And there was lots of crop left out in the field. The snow melted in the next 2 weeks, and a good part of the crop got harvested then. There's still, you know, still areas here that have a crop out in the field over winter now. But then, you know, it got cold real quick and froze quite deep. We were doing some tiling here, and it was too wet for a little bit. I waited for 2 or 3 days and got too frozen, so it was very quickly got cold on us.
Yeah, tiling in the fall is challenging, and a lot of growers that farm way south, way further southwest than you or me, they say, man, you guys are always talking about, you don't have much time in the fall. What are you talking about? Well, I challenge any of those guys that think we've got time to come north and see what it gets like in a hurry. So talk to us about your tiling. How long have you guys been doing it on your farm, and where are you at right now? Are you most of the way done getting your farm tiled, or are you just getting going?
Just getting going, doing some planning for the last couple of years, doing some surveying and that, and this was actually the first summer or first fall that we've been doing tiling. It's something new for our farm, and we had one quarter done earlier, and certainly saw results with the wet fall. The tile was running till very late, so I'm hoping that's going to translate into being a better spring to get on that piece, and the next farm we were doing, we just didn't get it done. We'll have to finish it in spring.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've got, compared to the ground south of you a few hours, you've got relatively heavy soils too. How quickly did you see water coming out those tile lines? Same day that you put it in?
Pretty much. It was the day after, for sure, there was water coming out of it already. And it was quite interesting how late, you know, it was. Everything else was froze up, and that main outlet was still running. It's a gravity outlet. It's not a, there's no drop structure here. There's enough slope to have a gravity outlet. Just ran till quite late in November.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm really excited for you. It will be fun to see how that is it come spring. We've noticed a huge difference on our farm. We've got some ground that's really low, and it's always been a challenge for us. As soon as we got that tile in, it was a world of difference the first year. So yeah, I'm excited. It'll be cool. When you're doing this tiling, is this stuff you're doing yourself then? You guys have a machine?
No, I don't have a machine. We've got a custom unit that came in to do it for us. We're very pleased with the way it went. They did a very nice job. So they did the surveying and the permits and stuff. So yes, it worked out quite smoothly for us.
Outstanding. Well, that is fun, Wes. We talk tiling quite often on the show because of what a difference it's made for us. Hopefully for you, it's equally as good. Really appreciate you calling in today, and good luck. You're heading into the spring. Hopefully you can get some more tiling done soon.
That's very good. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks, Wes. Here's another guy that knows something about tile. We got Cliff with us right now in northern North Dakota. Cliff, is that good to hear? The guys north of you are getting some tiling done?
I think that's an excellent idea for them because, as you know, some of their water comes out of Canada, visits us down here in North Dakota, and then we send it back to them.
Yeah, it's funny how that works, but it's neat when we can get water moving this time of year. And I've talked to a number of growers in the Red River Valley that have said this too. They're seeing how much snow there is. They know what the potential is for flooding, and every tile line or lift station that's still running, they're really excited about that. Okay, good. At least we're getting rid of some of the water. Hopefully it lessens the flooding to some degree.
Yes, I would just try to put another idea into your head about tiling.
Okay.
And this has to do with the fall of 2018. We were very dry up here. I mean, you could lose a 12-inch crescent wrench very easily. So we had snow in the winter of 2018, 2019. And so as the snow melted and the water formed and ran in my drainage ditches, it came up against a set of culverts that were frozen shut with snow and ice. And as this quarter was tiled, the water came down the surface drainage, hit the frozen ice and snow, and then backed up through my tile lines and gave me subsurface irrigation.
Interesting.
Very interesting. My neighbors were watching it, and I was watching it, and that water that backed up in the tile lines, because we were so dry, that water never came out again.
Huh. Yeah, I was thinking about that same winter, and we had a large rainfall event, and we had quite a bit of snow cover on the ground, and it melted it all overnight, and that was running off on top of the ground, led to some flooding. Actually, that was this winter. That was this spring that we had that. Boy, time goes fast for me. And yeah, I know that the snow melt is always something that guys are thinking about and concerned about. And I was wondering where you're going to go. And you said the culverts are frozen. But yeah, putting the water back into the field, that's interesting. You know, we've been through some dry cycles here too after we've had tile in the ground. Haven't had any situation like that pop up, but we also haven't had it be a negative for us yet either. With your heavy ground, what are you seeing up there, Cliff? Because you've had some tile in the ground for a while.
What we're seeing is that the tile that's been in the ground for 5 years, we see more and more ease of movement of the water through the soil. And again, we have a lift station, and this spot is east of Russell. And again, when the soil's dry, we can put a gate on the culvert and use the lift station in reverse, cut the electricity off to it, and use that tile to backfeed that water into the subsoil. And when things thaw out and we have as much water as we can let the soil absorb, we plug the electricity in and we remove the excess. But it gives us the option for more water management.
Yeah, that is interesting. We talk a lot about managing water and managing air in soil, and that's a good way to look at the water side of things. Hey, Cliff, just one more quick question for you. We were talking with Wes up in Manitoba, and he said there's still some crop in the field in his area, and I know North Dakota certainly has its share. How about for your immediate area? How did guys turn out during harvest?
Our farm, and I will just say because of surface drainage and tiling, our crop was basically harvested early, and then we got the snow, and then it froze, so we went back out on frozen ground, and so we have very little ruts. But our farm is probably a little different than most of the farms in the area. They still have wheat out there. They have canola out there. There's a lot of corn still out there. So, yes, it varies from farm to farm, but again, water management plays a key role.
Yeah, it certainly does. Cliff, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on the show, and good luck to you here heading into the spring.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it does definitely make a big difference. And wow, there's a lot of guys that are struggling further north from us trying to get that crop still in. Hopefully the weather works out. I don't know exactly what some need. Some need some more frost in the ground to make that happen. Curious to hear what's going on your farm. It is Farmer Friday. And our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce Herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You know, a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Maximize your flexibility and control the toughest broadleaf weeds and grasses with Anthem Max herbicide from FMC. With a wide application window in both corn and soybeans, and with an easy-to-tank mix formulation, Anthem Max is ready to go when you are. Visit FMCAgUS.com or ask your FMC retailer about Anthem Max herbicide. Always read and follow all label directions and precautions for use. FMC and Anthem are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It's Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We got an email here from Keegan. He said, I'm located in the panhandle of Nebraska, and I'm thinking about trying some pinto beans this spring on a piece of no-till dryland ground that had Milo on it last year. I'd like to use Spartan Charge as my pre-emerge herbicide along with Roundup and apply it with 32% nitrogen. It's mostly a loamy, sandy ground. Will this work on my pintos? What is your suggestion for starter fertilizer?
And also he wants to know starter fertilizer?
Sure.
Okay, so first of all, in terms of Spartan Charge, not labeled there. It is labeled in North Dakota and Minnesota. They got special state exemptions to get Spartan Charge labeled there, but unfortunately, it is not labeled in Nebraska on pintos. So really, all you're left with pre-emerge, unfortunately, is going to be prowl and no-till. Now, you can use dual if you wanted to, or you know, one of the dual products. We'd rather see you use prowl because it's better, though. In terms of post-emerge, you got a few options for weed control, but not a whole lot. So it's Basagran, it's Reflex, it's Raptor Pursuit, and then, of course, the grass killers like Select Max. That's the trouble with raising dry beans in other areas besides North Dakota and Minnesota. When you can't use Spartan, how are you going to kill those broadleaves? How are you going to kill kochia? And how are you going to kill water hemp and, you know, some of the Roundup resistant weeds that we have been facing around the Midwestern United States? All right. So like kochia, for example, I mean, that's why we want to get that prowl out there, use a decent rate, and then certainly Reflex post-emerge will give you a little activity, but it's tough. That's one of the big challenges. Okay. So in terms of starter fertilizer, it's kind of the same thing as soybeans. You can't use much. In furrow, you can use almost nothing. You got to use a real low salt product. We like agro liquid stuff, Pro Germinator, Sure K, just because it's very low salt, and keep the rate down. And also, if you want to safen it even more, mix it with a little bit of water to dilute it. So that works pretty well. Otherwise, you certainly can put some 2x2. But one of the big challenges we have, whenever we start talking about no-till, and earlier in the show, Darren was talking to another farmer about no-till and what he was putting on. Well, when you start broadcasting fertilizer, let's take P&K. How much does P&K move in the soil? Especially when you're in a dry area of the country, number one. And if I don't know what the soil type is there, if it's heavy or light, whatever you're dealing with. But I do know, you start talking panhandle in Nebraska, it's dry. So when you don't have a lot of rainfall, and even if you did, phosphorus isn't moving. If you are in no-till and you aren't going to do anything with that soil, I do not ever recommend that you broadcast phosphorus, because in 10 years, it's not even going to get down an inch in that soil. It's not going to happen. So what are you going to do to move it down there? Our suggestion is, with a planter, you can put on some 2x2. And if that's the only way you want to put fertilizer on, then you're going to have to put a lot on. Otherwise, we'd say take a Coulter and just deep inject. You certainly can go with a tillage program, maybe once every 10 years even. Do something. But the point is, if you're broadcasting fertilizer in no-till, especially phosphorus, zinc, copper, the ones that really don't move, it's never getting down into where most of your roots are going to be at, which is in the 4 to 8 inch range. It's never going to get there. Potassium, it eventually will get there. It might take 20 years, but it's going to get there because potassium moves much easier than phosphorus, zinc, and copper. But still, if you have heavy soil, dry weather conditions, it's not going to get there real fast either. So to get the most bang for your buck on fertilizer, we'd really encourage you, get it down into that soil in a no-till situation. If, like I said, the only way you can do it is with the planter, we'd encourage you to go 2x2 because you can't, with dry beans, soybeans, any of these crops that are real sensitive to fertilizer, put very much in furrow.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Really appreciate that. Got one from Patrick here up in Alberta. And Patrick said, I'm just wondering what your opinion would be on the best legume for intercropping with corn for silage. We grow an 81-day corn.
What do you think he means by intercrop, Darren? Do you think it's in between the rows, or do you think it's like 6 rows of corn, 6 rows of a legume?
It's a great question because there's a lot of different ways folks are doing this. Yep. I took it as in between the rows of corn.
That's what I thought too.
But yeah, so let's say that it was intercropping, like 6 rows of corn, 6 rows of soybeans or something along those lines.
Let's take it both ways. Okay, so we get this question a lot from people who want to raise things for livestock where they say, I want to raise a blend of crops. I want a legume and corn, and I'm going to try to raise both very effectively. Our answer is always don't. Our answer is split the field, raise your corn on one side, raise whatever other stuff on the other side. And the reason why is because corn and that legume are going to require different fertility, different seeding dates, different seeding methods, different herbicide methods, different insect control, different disease control. And now all of a sudden, you got to treat it all the same. So we have a lot of concern about that. And I would just tell you this. I would just say there's almost zero chance that you are going to outproduce me if I was to do exactly what you're talking about, only I split it. So I put legume on half the field, corn on half the field, do everything I can to raise both, versus if I mix them all together and try to raise that all as one. Okay, now, if we're talking 6 and 6, that's a different deal. And what I would say is, so let's say you got whatever, call it 20 feet of corn, 20 feet of beans. So we did that for a few years on some acres, and here's exactly what we found. We did increase our corn yields, and so that's great, and you will get a lot of tonnage out of that. It'll be great on the corn side. It's going to stink for the legume because the legume's shorter. It's going to get shaded out. So what happened for us is we gained 60 bushels on a corn, 60, without even trying. It was so unbelievably easy to get 300 bushel corn. It was incredible. But our soybeans went from 70, 75 down to 50, 55. So we lost 20 bushels on the beans. And so it was a wash dollar-wise, and it is a lot more work to do intercropping where you're, whatever, 20 feet of one crop, 20 feet of another. All right, let's get to the phone lines. We got Dan calling in from Virginia. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Good. How are y'all?
Doing great.
I've got a question about spreading potash over some growing wheat.
Okay.
Maybe this spring.
Yep.
I've been trying to build up my base saturation K levels.
Sure.
Pretty much on the whole farm. I was just wondering, is there any problem, or should I be worried about that?
Honestly, that's something we never recommend people to do. Number one, you got to drive down your wheat. Number two, if any of that potash gets hung up in the leaves, then you're most likely going to get some degree of burning there. Now, it's certainly not as bad as what urea might be or some other fertilizers you could put out there, but I would have concerns with all that. And then the next concern that I've got is how quickly that that potash is going to break down. With potash, it takes a lot of time, and it takes moisture and heat to break down. My question is, is it going to do any good for this crop, or is it really about the future? So if I'm thinking about this, what I'd rather do if it was me, and Darren, you see what you think about this, but you mentioned spring. If it was me and I had winter wheat out there right now, and let's say it's dormant right now. Now, I don't know if it is in your area in Virginia, but if it is, I might go spread it right now. So the sooner I get it out there, the sooner it's most likely going to be available for my crop. And then I would have less risk, obviously, with hurting the crop if it would happen to be dormant. But no, I can't tell you that. I mean, I've been an agronomist for 30 years now, and I have never recommended potash applied one time over the top of a wheat crop. So we always tell people, put it out there in advance. Then you don't have to run the wheat down. You got a better chance to use it for this crop and everything. But I mean, I appreciate the fact that you have identified that, hey, you need some more potassium. I don't love this application method. It's probably better than nothing, but the sooner the better.
Okay. Right. So that would apply as well over top of the corn.
Yep, exact same thing. So no way am I putting it over the top of corn. I would get it out there before I get my corn planted.
Hey, thanks for the question, Dan. Really appreciate it. We'll be right back after this.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. Our exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
How much yield and profit did you lose the moment you put your seed in the ground? A poor stand at planting keeps your crops from reaching their yield potential, and closing the seed trench behind the planter is essential to establishing a good crop stand. The Germinator Closing Wheel from FarmShop MFG is here to give your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Act now to receive an early order rebate plus free shipping. Get ready for spring planting with the Germinator Closing Wheel. For more information, visit FarmShopMFG.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show. Phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. Got a message from Marty in Colorado. He said, I read an article that Corteva is going to quit producing chlorpyrifos. Does this signal the market that Lors Ban is done? Should I be stocking up for my farm right now?
Well, yeah, but let's not forget Corteva. So go back to who had most of that chemistry. That was Dow and DuPont, and a lot of that came from Dow. Well, Dow also dropped Treflan, whatever it is, 20 years ago. And you'll occasionally hear Darren or me say the words Treflan or the word Treflan, but there's all kinds of generic Trefluralin out there. It's the same thing here. I had an agronomist send me this too, and I just said, I don't care if Corteva drops Lors Ban. As an agronomist, I haven't been recommending name brand Lors Ban for years because it's been $1 or $2 an acre higher than the generic. So it doesn't really matter. But no, I mean, Lors Ban isn't getting banned or anything like that other than in California where they have no scientific data to ban it. They just like to ban things, which is fine, whatever. You know, we've got 49 other states in the United States, and then there's Canada and all kinds of other places around the world. But Lors Ban's going to continue to get used. It's just the active ingredient rather than the technical name, Lors Ban.
All right, very good. Also got some feedback from one of our listeners who said, got into a little debate on Twitter with the seedsmen down in Texas about this 50-degree soil temperature for planting. Can you just talk through it, please, about the chilling injury or lack thereof, and also what you do to plant in the north?
It's been 6 years ago now. We asked some of the highest-yielding farmers in the world to come to our farm, and we would seed the crop for them and do everything they wanted for them, but they would have plots on our farm. And we were fortunate enough to get the highest yielding corn farmers in the history of the world, David Hula, Randy Doughty, and Stephen Albrecht. There are only three guys. They remain the only three people who've ever raised over 500 bushel corn in the world, 500 bushels per acre. Well, anyway, Albrecht was from Texas. He passed away a couple years ago. Hula is from Virginia, and Doughty is from Georgia. And we continue to work with David Hula and Randy Doughty, and talk to them even on a very regular basis. Super great guys. Everything's awesome. The thing is, they have dramatically different soil types than we do, and their climate's a lot different. And there was some comment that Randy had made one year about, you know, I really want on my farm for the corn to pop out of the ground. I don't remember what he said for days. It was 5 days or 7 days or something. And I go, Randy, do you realize how cold it is here? And it was in 2017. I just pulled this up because I got this right here. I pulled up in 2017 and I said, okay, April 10th is our first planting date. And even, I don't remember what the soil temp was or anything, but let's assume even if it was 50 degree soil temp then, it takes a certain amount of growing degree days to get corn out of the ground. The standard has always been 100. We can do it in less than that, and I'll explain that in just a second. But anyway, I said, okay, if I want to get to 100 growing degree days, if I planted on April 10th, it would still take 19 days for that corn to get out of the ground. 19! And I said, even if I planted May 1st, which we almost always are going to lose yield if we wait until May 1st to plant, it would still take 12 days. And I said, even if I waited till June 1st, when I can promise you we've lost a good portion of our yield potential, it would still take 7 days to get out of the ground on June 1st. Well, you're not planting corn in June in South Dakota if you want it to yield as good as it possibly can. So it's just very different. So that's the first thing that I will say. What I have said ever since I heard the words imbibitional chilling, I said nonsense. No. But I will tell you, when you're going to put seed in the ground and it's going to be in a cold and usually damp environment, which we always seem to have up here, if you don't do something for that in terms of treatments and maybe other things, you're in trouble. So you can call it imbibitional chilling or whatever, but I don't care if it's 40 degrees or 50 degrees or 60 degrees, it doesn't matter. You still can have problems putting seed in the ground. Personally, do I believe imbibitional chilling? Absolutely, I do not. No way. People will talk about, oh, if the first drink the plant gets is cold, it's in trouble. I'm like, you're nuts. I planted corn when it's 40 degrees, and it's turned out phenomenally well. So you're crazy. It's fine. But we have to do more with treatments. So on the corn seed that we plant, we have 33 treatments on there. Plus, we put a little bit of fertilizer in furrow. I was talking about that earlier in the show, some low salt at a low rate. So we do that. So we help boost that corn out of the ground faster. And between the seed treatment and the fertilizer, we can pop corn out of the ground in 75 to 80 growing degree units, not 100. Okay, next, I look at, on that disease side, is there maybe even more I can do? We have had some success putting headline or similar products in furrow very early. I mean, when we're planting very early into very cold soils. So that absolutely can help. And then finally, when the corn's going to sit in the ground for potentially 10 to 20 days, it's much more likely that we're going to have an insect problem out there. So we like putting some insecticide in furrow too. We'll use Capture LFR or one of the products, one of the premixes that has Capture LFR in it. When we do all those things, we can get very, very, very good stands. I don't worry too much about that. And even if your soil temp is 50 degrees, we've had it before many times where, well, I go plant, soil temp's 50 degrees, and within 3 or 4 days, the soil temp all of a sudden is in the 30s. This is no joke. We've also had it where we get a foot of snow after we've planted the corn. Lots of things happen here in the northern United States. I tell people all the time, you're just fine planting corn as long as the soil conditions are fit, number one, and number two, you're within the insurance date. Okay, so like for me, that's why I said April 10th, that's our first insurance date. So insurance date fine, soil type or soil condition fine, you go plant. I don't care what the soil temp is. I don't care if it's 35, if it's 45, if it's 55, doesn't make any difference to me if I'm doing all those other things. Now, if you don't want to get good seed treatment, you don't want to put some fertilizer out, you don't want to do these other things to make it pop out of the ground faster, then by all means, delay your planting. But just understand, when you delay planting, that usually means a little bit lower yield.
All right, thanks for the question. Did you want to talk any more about the intercropping thing, Brian, or did we already get that?
Go ahead. Just
we got some feedback from Patrick, and he said the intercropping I was talking about was between the rows of corn looking for silage.
Yeah, so we mentioned that in the last segment, and like I said, then I'm not in favor of that. And prove me wrong is what I would tell you. So let's do it this way. Take, say, half of your field and put it all together, and then take the other half and split it. So you got 25% the legume, and that's all by itself. 25% is the corn, and that's all by itself. And I can almost guarantee you, you are going to end up with more tonnage in my approach than the other approach. So that's, well, of course, I really should rephrase that. You're going to have a better crop in total. So I don't know what you're exactly trying to accomplish here, why you would want to put the legume in there, but the legume isn't going to do very well. Nothing's going to do very well when that corn gets big and chokes everything out. So anyway, many, many things we could talk about with that, but I do not advise that. Planting two crops together. Plant the two crops separate, and you'll do a better job with each crop.
All right, one last question. This comes from Tyson in Indiana. He said, my agronomist wants me to leave the Valor or Authority in my soybean herbicide program on top of the ground rather than tilling it in. Okay. I understand I shouldn't bury these herbicides deep, but he's warning me about possibly hurting my soybeans. I've heard on your show that light tillage actually reduces the risk of splash up and injury.
Yep.
I'm looking for your advice on how best to use Valor or Authority.
Well, I don't have any issue if you want to lay it on the surface of the soil, but you're taking more crop injury risk laying them on the surface. And I know that may seem contradictory, and obviously it is in this case compared to what your person's telling you, but they're wrong. I'm not worried about Valor and Authority hurting the seed. We've done this for years, lightly incorporated it. You're fine. Just lightly incorporate it. You can't be disking it in and getting some of the stuff in 5 inches deep or anything like that, but just lightly till it in. And the reason why you have less crop injury is because you got less chance for splash up. That's what we're talking about here. So typically with Valor, if you get a big rain shortly after you've applied it and the beans are out of the ground now, then you will have the rain splashing back upwards and hitting the underside of the leaves. And with the Valor that's in it, you'll see leaf burn. Now, we've never had that hurt yield. We've never seen that hurt yield, but still people don't like it. So if you want to avoid that, lightly till it in.
Thanks for the question, Tyson. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.